It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
I want a party. I want a samba.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sozi. Show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and we have a blog, which someday we'll update at.
Yeah, filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The voice you just heard is a man who is on his own, but he's got support.
Oh,
that's Kobe Slagle.
Hello.
We'll get to that in a little bit. And joining us in studio, ladies and gentlemen, every now and then, this is the time of the year where I, besides being a film critic and Lou's House Party host, I also have the extra job of play director. I'm directing the comedy Born Yesterday at Scottish Rite Cathedral. It opens in March. So that means my evenings are now devoted to rehearsals. So this is the time of year where I take my shoe off and bang it on the desk demanding more morning press screenings until it's over. And then I want more evening screenings. So anyway, I didn't see anything new this week, and I was on the board this morning, because that's the other thing, was I would do the Matt thing or the Gina and Dan thing of going to see something at 10:30 on Friday and still talking about it today. Filling in, fresh from Indie Style 8 hours ago, but he's here now, Chris Lloyd of the Film Yap.
That's
Hi, Chris.
Why Chris is here.
Hey, I am glad, I'm happy to be your film-going avatar, that like, you know, like a video game. You just plug me in and I go to the movies for you.
That's right. You don't put enough nacho seasoning in the butter, so do that.
Man, what a great description.
I like that.
That was
really good.
Good.
So now, and it's funny. We were talking off air about what married people with kids do and what married people with older kids do. And apparently, we're in three different stages right now this weekend. By the way, tonight at 7 o'clock, if you do not have plans and you're listening to the show,
and
now
it's okay if you don't.
It's okay you don't, because we have planned suggestions for you tonight at the IMA at 7 o'clock as part of their winter film series, Raising Arizona.
Wow.
Yep.
So, well worth it. So, if you and the Sozi family,
the trio that is we
are going to be there. If you come up to me and you say Film Sociology is a real show, you will get a prize package courtesy of Film Sociology.
Cool.
And WFYI Radio.
It's going to happen one day.
It will happen someday. So, maybe this week.
But how do people know what you look like, since you're a radio guy?
I'm glad you asked
that's
that.
That's the internet.
Well, there is the internet, and the first film of the series, Some Like It Hot, I was talking with Kelly Gualdoni and Adam Tran, who have both been on this show, as well as a couple other friends who tagged along, and somebody in the front row turned around and recognized my voice.
Wow.
Hey, are you that guy from the...
Yes, I am that guy from the...
Yeah.
So, and that would make me... That's like a Detroit fan on a winning streak, right, Kobe?
Yeah, insufferable.
Insufferable.
Yeah, see, nobody ever recognizes me.
You don't get that? Come on, you're on TV every Friday morning.
I've been on the TV for 6 months now. No one ever recognizes me.
Wow.
That happened to me once.
What, you were recognized on TV?
No, I wasn't on TV. I was in an auditorium and somebody heard me talking or saw me or something and looked around and, aren't you Kobe from Kobe and His Tall Band?
Yes, Tall Band. There you go. And, of course, you witnessed when we went to see The Room at IU. And
yeah,
the film
that was unbelievable. That was unreal.
I'm the oldest one in the theater for the room by far. I'm sure, and this is where people. I think this is where the running joke that I'm Kobe's dad started, and the student film, the student TV station had a camera crew, and they were talking to people in line going into the room, and two guys came up and went, "Are you Matthew Soucy? We love your show. Would you interview for this?" And yeah, Kobe, I didn't even need my hand. I think just my head pushed him out of the way, going, "Give me some space, son." So yes, I like that. Anyway, that's tonight at the IMA Raising Arizona. But we were talking about you are at a stage, Chris, where it's basically work, movies, and then home.
Yeah, work, movies, home, and then taking care of kids, cooking, cleaning. Doing for others. It's the selfless phase.
All about them, apparently.
Yeah, I had many years of the selfish phase of being a single guy.
And now you fight to bring it back.
Yeah, well, so like Kobe, he's in the prime spot. Young, married, gets to do all sorts of cool stuff. Yeah.
There's a special wrinkle this week because Fair Sweet Bianca left this morning.
Yes.
She is overseas on business.
She is en route. Yes.
She is en route to business. So I got to hear stories that apparently not only is Kobe able to do anything he wants, but apparently in his circle of family and loved ones and friends, apparently he is not capable of anything because they're sending him food and making sure you have plans.
I received a very nice care / survival package from Bianca's wonderful, lovely grandma in California.
Who's probably listening right now.
Including, let's see what we have. We had red velvet pancake mix. We had boysenberry syrup. We had red velvet cake mix. We had like the little cubed cheese snack, like the laughing cow.
Yeah,
cheese triangle.
You don't know how to buy that.
Yeah, that, some salami. Yeah, the whole deal.
And it would be one thing if it was snowpocalypse and she's gone, but no, we're fine. But you even have plans this evening. I offered if you wanted to spend time with the Soucy fam. But I did give you the Marx Brothers box set. You need to watch that.
Ooh. Oh yes, I do have that. In the event that snowpocalypse happens next week,
you're set.
Snowmageddon. Yeah, I'm
okay.
Set.
That's good.
Yeah, me and Frank will just kick it and watch the Marx Brothers.
Well, cherish these years, young man.
Yep.
Because once you have little kids, I'll tell you want to know what's me cutting loose? A trip to the hardware store to get air filters for the furnace.
Yeah.
That's me on the prowl.
You mean you're not breaking down Spartacus for the kids yet?
No. This problem is they're too young to like watch the stuff that you want to watch, but you know. Unless you want to watch Wreck-It Ralph for the 147th time.
Is that the film of choice?
Well, he moves. It's like every now and then he moves from movie to movie.
Yep.
Right now he's back to Cars.
The first
Cars
one.
Or Cars 2?
We actually don't have Cars 2. The one Pixar film I do not own on...
You tell him it doesn't exist, right? Because I remember Emma seeing trailers for Shark Tale, and I would not acknowledge its existence. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know. That's not a real movie.
It's a fake trailer. It's a
parody.
Grindhouse. All right. Well, let's get to some real movies. Now, opening this week, we have That Awkward Moment with Zac Efron, who, by the way, apparently is going to stay single forever until he meets the right girl. Something like that.
And Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan and Miles Teller. So three guys that are actually kind of more ambitious than your young
teen heartthrobs. I got a feeling, there's probably a younger audience going to That Awkward Moment than, say, Fruitvale Station.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get it for Michael to...
Or The Spectacular Now, yeah.
That's true. So there's that. We have Invisible Woman, which I thought already opened. Didn't it open like a couple weeks ago? Because our colleague Ed Johnson-Ott's review ran a Nouveau.
They did screen it first, but it was like 2.5-3 weeks ago. Unfortunately, it's like I'm like you. There's times when those daytime screenings are totally cool, and times where they're totally uncool, and I can't go to them.
Well, anyway, it finally opens today.
That's so uncool.
It
man.
Is so uncool. But it's Ralph Fiennes starring and directing as Charles Dickens. This is the film, and
It is just out this week.
Just opened today, apparently.
Felicity
I thought
Jones.
It was already here.
Felicity Jones.
Chris Scott Thomas.
Who's a great movie star name, Felicity Jones.
Yes. Felicity Shagwell.
But so this is sort of in that Shakespeare in love mode of, you know, the supposed romantic dalliances of a famous literary figure, and is it actually true?
It's right up your alley, Kobe.
Mm-hmm. Sure is.
Kobe's wife and Kobe's mother-in-law going together.
Yep.
And but you did see Labor Day. You saw the Jason Reitman drama with
Kate Winslet,
Josh Brolin, and by the way, the trailers scream like it's based on a novel by Nicholas Sparks, but yeah. It is not.
Joyce Maynard. Apparently, Jason Reitman has actually been like upset about this and pushing back on social media, saying, "No, this is not based on a Nicholas Sparks movie. It's based on a Joyce Maynard movie."
But
it's
boy,
a book. I mean,
yeah. It's a pie drama.
It's a pie drama. So
they're real big on that pie scene in the trailers.
Because when you are on the run and you're a criminal, the only thing you hope for is to get Kate Winslet held hostage, and she eventually falls in love with you. That's my snarky thing. Chris, you saw the film,
yeah.
Didn't you?
This is an interesting movie because I interviewed Jason Reitman in person about 5 years ago, and he was talking about DePaul University. And we asked him, so what's your next movie? And he was talking about this was going to be his next movie.
This one.
But I think something fell apart or whatever, and he ended up making Young Adult.
Underrated film.
I think overrated film. Yeah, one of those love it or hate it kind of movies.
Sure.
I'm on the edge of. There's some great performances in it, but it's one of those, like, why am I watching it kind of movies.
You don't want to timeshare a condo with these people.
Exactly. So he did eventually get around to making it. Not getting a whole lot. I mean, of course, this is the guy who made Up in the Air, Juno, Thank You for Smoking, very high-profile films.
Good track record.
Very good track record. One of Hollywood's brightest young lights, as they say. So why is this movie? You know, it did get a ever-so-brief theatrical release to qualify for the Oscars. Ha ha.
But she got a Golden Globe nomination for it. But then again, yeah, it's 10 actresses have a shot.
And so here it is being pushed out in January with a wide release. Obviously, I mean, kind of get that being dumped on the market feel to it.
But at least it doesn't have a feel or a look of I, Frankenstein, which I had to sit through last week. So it's not just dumb thrillers.
This is a classic, you know, where the studio says, we don't know what to do with it. When do you release it? Do you release it during the summer as counter-programming to the big movies? Do you release it during the
spring, maybe?
You know, a very busy award season back in November and December. I felt like they felt like it would have gotten lost. So this and
the George Clooney movie were casualties of mass production.
Yeah, Monuments Men, another movie coming out in a couple. Is it next week?
I think it is.
Yeah, I think it is. February 7th.
I really like this movie a lot. I thought it was very understated, lovely film, terrific performances by Josh Brolin in particular, because, you know, the basic setup for the story is based on this novel is, you know, it's in the 1980s and distraught, divorced, single mom who basically has stopped functioning, and she has a son who's about 13 years old and entering that stage of life. And they live by themselves somewhere in New England, and they just have this random encounter with a guy who's an escaped prison convict, and he takes them hostage / browbeat them into taking them home and letting them hide out. And over the course of a long Labor Day weekend, they sort of end up becoming...
Love through Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, it's basically, not really Stockholm Syndrome in the sense that there's, you know, the threat of, like, I'm going to hurt you quickly dissipates, and it's just what happens. And, you know, the son ends up sort of seeing him as a bit of a father figure. The wife ends up sort of seeing him as a partner, a kindred soul.
Pie maker.
And they do make pie. I'll tell you, for a guy, you know, in the story who's been in prison for like the last 15 or 20 years, this is a total renaissance, man. He can fix cars, fix doors, fix houses, and bake the world's greatest pie with just like whatever's lying around the house.
How many pies do they make?
In the movie, he actually only makes a single pie. One pie.
But so it's not like a continuing theme.
Well,
it's not a pie factory.
There is a continuing theme towards the end, which I will not ruin, but the pie does come up again. Just lovely shot movie, very understated music. The performances are great, particularly Josh Brolin, because that is a hard tone for a movie to hit. And that's a hard thing for an actor to do when there's really not a whole lot on the page for him as a character other than being this guy who does all this stuff. And he really finds a center to that character. And I'm an outlier in this. If you look at Rotten Tomatoes, it's kind of going all over the place.
So this might be the one that you defend. At the end of the year, we always have like one picture that we praise or panned, complete opposite of the group. And I think you already have an early runner on this one.
Honestly, I thought it was really, really good.
Okay.
Really lovely movie. I highly recommend if you're into that sort of, you know, indie, restrained sort of movie.
I've a couple things I've read in other reviews, but the fact that I think this might be the case of the term melodrama being used for good. I think when people say melodrama, obviously they think it's, you know, hand-wringing and overwrought and...
Yeah, I would agree that, in the, you know, melodrama tends to have, like, big plot pivots, you know, big things happen. Right. And
like a Douglas Sirk picture.
Big maybe. Things don't really happen in this movie. I mean, it's basically just what I said. You know, once you get over that bump of this sort of crazy, offbeat setup, it's basically just these three people in a house over the course of 3 or 4 days and what happens.
So, Kobe, you have intimate plot things with intimate character things.
Yeah,
they're intimate. They're sheer. This sounds like a negligee ad.
Does only if Kate's in it? Has Fair Sweet Bianca said anything about Labor Day?
No, she has not.
Well, and now she won't.
No.
So aren't you lucky?
I am.
Okay, very good. So
I'm with you on Kate Winslet, by the way. Her pledge to no longer be the English chick who always gets her kit off. I'm very depressed about that.
Welcome to pig sociology right there. Okay, so, yeah, he recommends it. Do you have something?
Yeah, I think...
You have something
I think,
that fits?
Well, no, I was looking through here, and, of course, now I've... Oh, here we go. I think this is appropriate here.
I love it when a movie grabs me frequently and...
And makes pies. Yes. Once again, thanks, Chris. just a reminder, it's still in theaters, 12 Years a Slave, August, Osage County. I think if you go to Keystone Art, everything playing there is nominated. So
isn't somebody doing a all 10 Best Picture nominees?
That sounds like something that. I think AMC does. They'll do like a marathon.
I got an email about that. I think that's coming up.
So check AMC or check Fathom. And
or
see
all
if
nine. I should say nine. They didn't go for 10 this year.
Also, it's happening tonight.
They decided they were going to draw a line at 9.
They have the last couple times. We haven't had it. There hasn't been 10 nominees, has there?
I think there was 1 year. Well, they have this strange system where they have to be a Best Picture nominee, you have to have a certain percentage was like the number one on the Oscar voters.
So it's like the
ballot,
MVP
so...
and Hall of Fame voting, basically.
Yeah, I don't know. It's too bad because there's a lot of movies that could have filled that number 10 spot real easy.
I agree. So anyway, also happening at the IMAX theater, and you can read our colleague Ed Jensenot's review of it in Nuvo, but the film called 12 O'Clock Boys.
Sounds really interesting.
Or is it apparently, what's the tagline? Are you The Wire with Wheelies?
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, documentary about dirt bike gang in Baltimore.
It actually sounds really interesting, and I should give a shout out to Craig Mentz, our friend over
hey,
at IMAX.
Hey, Craig.
He actually sent me an online screener to this, and I didn't get to see
so
it.
So maybe you should see it, and it'll maybe run another week. And you
yeah,
talk
exactly.
About it. There you go. Because I know coming next week, oh, please don't delay this, the shorts, the yes. Oscar-nominated shorts.
I finished the animated ones. Still
okay.
Still have to get to the live-action
ones. That's my project this week. So that yes, I can actually see something while I'm in rehearsal mode.
I will say this. For once, I don't think the Pixar animated short is the front runner. I think there's one or two others that are going to be the clear favorite.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Speaking of my daughter, who is now Miss YouTube and Instagram and all that, apparently there is a short. She showed me a short film. Do you remember the short black and white film that involved paper?
Yeah.
And the guy and the girl and they're
the
chasing.
Paper Man.
Yeah, Paper Man. Yeah. Well, somebody has created their own version of what would happen if there was an attempted three-way between guy, girl, and Paper Man.
Oh,
man made of boy. Paper. And it is really weird because it looks just like the animated feature. So it reminds me of, if you get a chance, go on YouTube. Somebody recreated, remember the god-awful Yogi Bear film that came out, the bad CG
yeah.
feature? Well, somebody, and there was a great rumor for about a day or so that the actual filmmaker did this, but he didn't. But somebody took Yogi Bear and Boo Boo and the setting of Yogi Bear and recreated the end of the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, shot for shot. And wow. And for the 20 people that saw that film, and I have, and I loved it, it's hysterical. Wow. So look for that. There's your – that might be a new segment, your YouTube clip of the week. So
– by the way, if you couldn't tell, everyone here has a cold. So
yeah, we're a bit throaty this evening. But, my hater aid and Ganesha.
Not doing the trick.
Not doing the trick.
No.
Not doing the joke.
What's the trick and the joke?
Oh,
can
geez.
You allude
what
to
do you
it?
Get, what do you, what, all right, fine. Here it comes, Kobe. I get to tell this joke 2 weeks in a row. What do you get when you cross Stan Getz with a healing herb?
What?
Girl from Echinacea.
See that? Oh, man. Thank you. What a great response there, Chris.
Do we have that one?
Yeah, we got that. Mm. Got that.
Kobe, what is happening at your alma mater?
We are showing tonight, Friday, 6:30, from 1966, Daisies.
Okay.
Know it?
Don't know it. Do you
know it?
No.
Follow that up 9:30 tonight with The Invisible Woman.
Oh, there you go.
Saturday, February 1st, 3 o'clock, Born Yesterday from 1950.
No way. Wow. Mm-hmm. Really? Yes. Judy Holliday, William Holden, and Broderick Crawford.
Currently sitting in my DVD Netflix queue.
And we will not talk about the remake from the 90s. I banned my cast and crew. Well, I banned from watching any version, but don't watch the remake from the 90s. Not needed. That's great. Cool. What else?
6:30 Saturday evening at IU Cinema. 2014 Iris Film Festival shorts program.
Yep.
And again, 9:30, The Invisible Woman. And then Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, if you don't want to watch some football, if everybody isn't ready for some football at 3 o'clock, you have Through the Olive Trees. And then at 6:30, again, The Invisible Woman.
When do Colts Nation stop rooting for the Broncos? Is that when Peyton retires?
Probably.
Okay. Because
you're not rooting for Seattle, are
you? Oh, absolutely not, but... I'm not doing the split jerseys.
That's so...
Or the somebody made the Denveropolis Broncolts. Somebody's made these shirts. You know they're out there. I'm not kidding. You know, certain people in this building would buy that in a heartbeat.
Yep.
You're looking it up, aren't you?
Oh, you know it.
Yeah.
You can't throw that out there and then
not
look it up. No.
Okay, fine.
Denver.
No, absolutely rooting because I would love to have because then if Peyton wins, then the stupid will really come out and we shouldn't have gotten rid of Peyton Manning. Those calls will just pepper sports radio.
Yeah.
I love dumb sports calls.
I'm really rooting for him just because, I mean, I want to end this conversation where people compare him to Tom Brady and be like, oh, no, Tom Brady's a better quarterback. Yeah.
Right. No, he's, you know, titles. Yeah, it's all about, I could throw that card down and talk about the titles, but stats, overall career, and yeah, having a second one, you got to have more than Eli.
Here's my thing.
You must have more than Eli Manning.
Him and Tom Brady is the, I'm going to be lambasted for this, but, you know, overall, New England has had better teams over the span of years than the Colts did. I mean, they were better teams, better draft picks, better coaching, on par altogether. And look at it this way. When Tom Brady went down with an injury, the team went 11-5. We all know what happened when Peyton Manning went down with an injury.
Yep.
Right. So, and by the way, if Peyton were still with the Colts, they still wouldn't be in the Super Bowl.
Probably not.
Probably not. So just... But
probably not.
Probably there's a lot. These are the people that look forward to the movies that will be shown during the Super Bowl broadcast. I think.
Are you going to watch the Super Bowl? Be honest.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. I watch it. Emma, my sous chef, and I, we are preparing a menu.
Oh, what's on the menu for Sunday?
We have not.
We're gonna
talk about that tonight.
We're gonna
break it down.
You're gonna game plan. You're gonna do your walkthrough.
I'm gonna have a dry erase board like Robert Irvine, film sociology guest Robert Irvine, and start going through. You know, will we make nachos
cool.
or mm-hmm. or buffalo wings or something like that? Emma
both
is,
good Super Bowl Sunday staples.
Emma is interested in Bruno Mars, not emotionally. She likes the music. So,
wow.
Oh no, you don't bring that up. That's not you don't. Yeah, you don't do the you like her, you like him, you like her.
You like it?
No, we don't do that with.
And then you get the look.
Yeah, you know, because you'll get little sister look.
Mm-hmm.
She'll kick you in the shins.
Yep.
And take away your eating utensils. Anyway, so she's going to watch the halftime show. She's really good. She'll sit down and watch maybe 20 minutes of football with me. She might ask a question, like a legitimate football question. And I'm like, and then I'll look at her. I'm like, you may go, dear. And she's like, okay. But yeah, I think I'll keep a list of the trailers. Because I'm telling you, the films they show during the trailers for the Super Bowl, like blue is the warmest color. Not going to be shown at the Super Bowl. Just... This is geared toward the same people that look forward to the non-football stuff in the Super Bowl, which is a big chunk of the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So,
in all likelihood, I'll be watching a marathon session of Jake and the Neverland Pirates because that is my life now.
Oh man,
that or
do you want to sneak out, come to the house?
That or
we'll hang out.
That or Lego Ninjago, which I didn't even know what that was until a couple three.
That's
weeks
preparing
ago.
For the Lego movie.
Man,
that's
Lego
coming
stuff
out.
Has gotten crazy.
Really?
It's gotten crazy. Like, I mean, when I was a kid, I had a ton of Legos. I had a ton of sets. But
I'm so old. I remember when they didn't even have specifically made sets. You just got colored plastic and created stuff. Not a Star Wars, not a Indiana Jones, not a Dungeons and Dragons. Did they make them? Anyway, but
not ninjas.
Not ninjas. So I don't know. Somebody needs to recreate. You know what they need? They need more Lego stuff of movie scenes. You know, I remember showing Emma. Somebody did Eddie Izzard stand up bits done in Lego, which actually was amusing. Somebody did the opening scene of The Usual Suspects, the lineup.
Oh.
Yeah, you have to look that up. Not now, because we're not on a delay.
Actually, I think I might have seen that.
And then The Onion has in their section Great Job Internet. But they did. Somebody recreated the mall car chase scene from the Blues Brothers.
Have seen that
in
one.
Lego.
Have
that
seen that
was,
one.
Thank you, single unemployed basement dweller who created that for our amusement. We appreciate it.
Again, people,
we salute you.
Again, people who have more time than me.
But you're married. You have kids. So, all right, we're gonna take a short break.
We've come full circle.
We're gonna get
now.
Some more.
We need to take a break.
We're gonna get some more liquid. We're gonna talk about a number of Blu-ray titles, especially. One in particular that we're also taking off our shoes and banging on the podium because none of you have seen enough of this film and you really should. We're gonna get castor oil on you. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. A fade.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
That's right. Film Sociology, your home for Tyler Hansbrough information. Even if he's with the Raptors. Welcome
right.
back. To Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point, WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org, also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Soci, hanging out with Kobe Slagle and with Chris Lloyd of the Film Yap. We've just gone through, the titles that are out on out in theaters. Now we have, there's only really one old title of note. And I guess the question is, do you need this on Blu-ray? And hopefully it's cleaned up. But the 1920 John Barrymore version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Mm. Wow.
So that is out. New on Blu-ray this week. There's five films, and I have seen all five of these. But the one that apparently we're going to berate.
Where were you? Where the fuck were you? Where the hell are you?
That's an old segment we haven't used in a while. It's called Where Were You? And this is where people like Chris and myself berate you for not going to see a movie that you really should have in theaters. Now, we've talked time and time again that box office receipts is not really equal good quality, because there's lots of really great films that make very little money, and there's lots of crappy movies that make lots of money. Well, in the case of this, we were surprised. This was a film that we liked a lot. It even scratched the bottom half of some people's top 10 list, and some performances stand out, and the fact that it's directed by Ron Howard, and the fact that you had Thor in it. We thought more people would go see the auto racing film Rush, and did not. Well, now's your chance. Get to it, folks.
Yeah, it was number 5 on my top 10 list.
Really? That terrific. High? Man.
I've said this several times. It sounds like a greater compliment than it is. Probably the best car racing movie ever made, just because the oeuvre of car racing movie is pretty awful.
Yeah, I would say
Le Mans is probably about the best before this.
Le Mans, Winning,
yeah.
Days of Thunder, Grand Prix.
Yeah, just not a great list.
Not a stellar list.
Well, like, Le Mans was a great movie for people who are real gearheads.
Really into it.
And are really into the technical aspects.
But it's just a lot of Steve McQueen walking around going, yeah, I guess.
Yeah. You know, where he famously doesn't say any dialogue for the first 45 minutes.
Right. And Grand Prix, at the very least, had some groundbreaking camera work, as far as they put the camera on the car, which has now been used, you know, thousands of times since. So yeah, there is that note.
This movie married great racing scenes with a really terrific, full-blown human story, very well-developed characters, splendid acting, particularly by Daniel Brühl, who should have gotten an Oscar nomination. Gosh darn it.
The essay, you take out Jonah Hill?
Oh, yeah.
Or Bradley Cooper, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so... I remember saying originally when this came out, the real star of this film is Peter Morgan, the screenwriter. Who worked with Ron Howard on Frost Nixon. He also did The Damned United, which is my favorite football film / soccer film. Yes, better than Victory. He also did Last King of Scotland and The Queen. I mean, just a rock-solid resume. And like you said, it is not about... will they win the race?
Yeah.
There is, of course, a big climactic car race, which, by the way, doesn't end like you think it should, if you don't know the auto hit racing history. But you have two rivals, two completely different styles of racing and lifestyles, and on paper, two massive jerks, really, in their own way. But this film, you find out why they're that way and why they must race. And you know, you hear this from a lot of athletes is when they're competing, they're living. And I think that's the case with both of these guys.
Yeah.
And it's just a really solid film. Yeah. It's not two race car drivers trying to outsmart one another. It is way more than that. So go rent it and go buy it, because you really should.
You really should. Just a terrific movie. I'm convinced that the reason it didn't do well, it did fairly well internationally. I'm convinced the reason it didn't do so well here is because it's about European Formula One racing, not about open wheel racing here in the States, or even open wheel racing in general. I think the feeling is, if it's not about NASCAR, that people aren't going to come see it, because, like, you know, the Ballad of Ricky Bobby or whatever, Talladega Nights, that made bank.
Stroke race.
I'll tell you, here's the really downside of this. It's probably long-term. You know, Angelo Pizzo, the writer of Hoosiers,
yes,
and Rudy, has been trying for years to get an Indianapolis 500 movie off the ground.
And I hate to say it,
the failure of Rush to really make bank here is probably going to hurt that effort.
And Turbo.
Technically, Turbo was an Indy 500 movie.
Yeah, yes, it was.
Yes, technically it was.
Technically it was. You would prefer to not listen to Turbo, Kobe, because it has not your guy in it.
Yeah, that's correct. Yes, for those of you that did not see Rush, Rush was released on September 27th. Other movies that came out that weekend, then Rush. So what else did people see?
Oh, right, yes.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2.
Also out on Blu-ray this week.
Don John.
Good movie.
No, good movie, but I think more people saw Rush.
Baggage Claim.
Ooh.
Not heard of. Metallica Through the Never.
Did that even come here?
I don't think it did.
I don't think it did either. It's strange, because we're in the land of mullets.
And Muscle Shoals.
Oh, I really need to see Muscle Shoals.
Did you see that weekend that you didn't see Rush, Indianapolis?
Oh, good. I was like, you're looking at me when you asked that. I'm like, I just told you I saw the damn movie. So, Muscle Shoals I need to see because Jeff Marker from the Gainesville Times raved about it. And it's the, if you liked 20 Feet from Stardom, then you're like Muscle Shoals if you're into music. So
go see Rush. Maybe I'm wrong with this. The first nude scene in a Ron Howard movie. Well, no, on Splash. Kind of.
You see Daryl. You do see Daryl.
You see some hiney from about 50 yards
away. Right, and of course, but it's also a Ron Howard film, so you have the, and it's PG, so you had the carefully placed hair over when you're a mermaid.
Interesting that you bring that up, because we watched Splash this week.
We?
Yes, we.
You and Fair Sweet Bianca?
That's right, we watched Splash.
You've seen it, right?
I'd seen it before, but I think I fell asleep midway through. But she said one of her favorite movies when she was growing up, so we watched it all the way through, and that is a hilarious movie.
Yes, it is. And you can't talk like John Candy in Swedish.
No.
Can't do that.
Whenever I think of John Candy, I think of him playing racquetball while smoking a cigarette.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Awesome. So awesome.
Speaking of which, somebody posted, I think it was Super Bowl III, 1967, Len Dawson in the locker room at halftime, sitting on a chair with a bottle, glass bottle of Fresca and a smoke. That was his halftime ritual. I want somebody from Denver or Seattle with a bottle of Fresca and a ciggy.
Oh, boy.
That's great. So you mentioned also opening on in video stores this week, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2. There are three animated sequels that all have something in common for me. I didn't think a second one was necessary, but I still liked it in spite of myself.
The creature design, I will say this, the creature designs in this movie are just splendid. They're absolutely imaginative and you know, really neat. Yep. The rest of the movie, it's kind of a repeat of the first time. The characters are just completely puddle deep.
Well, you're laughing, Cole, but I mean, Monsters University.
I liked it in spite of myself.
Well, I know, I sound like Night Before Christmas, but you know, Monsters University, good. It's a good film, but it's a sequel or a prequel to a great film.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. Despicable Me 2, just give the Minions their own series on Saturday morning. We're fine with that. But the thing that was, I thought all the food quips and cliches and jokes and har-har were already used up in the first one. Oh, I was so wrong.
Yeah.
'Cause there were a lot more in the second one. And while I think the first film was kind of a kid's introduction to the disaster movies, you know, if you think of it, it's animated Irwin Allen.
Yeah.
And the second one was, I think, their introduction to something like Jurassic Park or Island of Dr. Moreau, where science goes horribly, horribly wrong.
And it has a very funny parody of Apple and Steve Jobs in this movie, which I appreciated.
And more entertaining than the Ashton Kutcher film, which I saw, Kobe, and you didn't.
Nope, I did not.
Nope. So, okay, also out. Oh, hey, did you know that if you're old, it's funny? Because that's the premise, basically, of Las Vegas. That's a film with five Oscar winners.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
We were just discussing, like, where's Kevin Klein been? I haven't seen him in a movie in a long time, and this was his big return.
He got a big check to do this. More power to him. Then he can go.
Is that out this week?
That's out on DVD and Blu-ray this week.
Right.
Michael Douglas, Morgan Freeman, Robert De Niro, Kevin Klein, four guys who reunite for Douglas, who, by the way, is he's so orange, Mike Ditka even goes, damn.
Yeah.
And, of course, guess what? Douglas's character is marrying somebody half his age.
Yeah.
Oh. So, yeah. And I remember Ed saw this in the theaters. And, of course, the audience was, you know, of a particular age. And they loved it. But, yes, lots of blue pill jokes and old jokes.
Yeah.
Well,
at least they had an age-appropriate love interest with Mary Steenburgen.
And, by the way, she was probably the best thing about the film. That's the fifth one. She won for Melvin and Howard back in 79. So, and she's still looking good. And is a jolt of much-needed energy for over really, really tired old jokes.
Yeah, but I mean, that movie is like comfort food. It's not particularly inspired. It's not particularly ambitious, but
You don't mind spending 2 hours with
these
people.
They know their market demo and that, and they hit it. That movie made quite a bit of money.
Yeah. And then there's Academy Award nominated Jackass Presents Bad Grandpa.
Is that really?
Yep.
Best makeup.
Oh.
But I will tell you this. There's one. Yes, we've seen the old people, old person makeup on Johnny Knoxville, but there's one scene that they will not show at the Academy Awards that involves a part of the big punchline, of course, is, when you reach a certain age, a certain part of a male anatomy is going to droop. But in this case, it's swing like Freddy got fingered. This is a film, and I talked with Melissa Davis, who is a Jackass fan, and Jackass is made by boys for boys, and some of that stuff I still crack up about. I still laugh out loud, even though it's absolutely juvenile.
Except they're all like in their 40s. They're middle-aged guys now.
And I'm glad it's happening to them and not me. Yeah. Or you. But this one, they try to actually create a story of this grandfather with his son on the road. And then, so you have scripted plot things.
Really?
And then you have these, of course, hidden cameras where they pull off the Jackass-level stunts. It doesn't help that, Sacha Baron Cohen already did this film twice. And, yeah, I know Jackass was around first. But the fact that you're trying to actually make a story, this is a 90-minute film that could have been 50 and been okay.
Yeah.
But the fact that they have way more story than it really should be, people just want to see the stunts, the gags, the jokes. And even those are a bit tiresome. The one redeeming factor to this film, besides the fact that they make reference to Lightnin' Hopkins and they play a little Walter tune, therefore I'm playing those on tomorrow night's house party, and giving the film credit, but during the credits, the closing credits, you get to see the reveal of the filmmakers letting the public know that they were making something, which I don't think has ever been done in a Jackass show. So, but that's not worth renting it. Not at all. Now, there's also the other film that came out, and it's the Daniel Brühl double feature, because I forgot he was in this, and nobody saw this. And I'm still mulling it over, but The Fifth Estate.
Yeah, it was an interesting movie.
Featuring Kobe, featuring one of our favorite East-West All-Stars. One of our favorite East-West All-Stars. One of our favorite East-West All-Stars.
Benedict Cumberbatch, Oxford University.
Thanks, Kay and Peele. Yeah, Benedict Cumberbatch, of course, as you said, the most British name in the history of British names.
It's the Julian Assange story.
Right, the WikiLeaks.
WikiLeaks.
And it's...
Which, by the way, have you gone to the WikiLeaks website lately? I did when I was writing up my review of this. I mean, it's like dead now. They like post something, and it's very infrequently, and what they post is extraordinarily lame.
Ah. Well, this is, of course, the story about the rise and, yes, the fall and backbiting. And Daniel Brühl plays the, not sidekick, but kind of second in command on getting this done. And it was directed by Bill Condon, which I forgot about. And I think one of the reasons why this maybe a lot of people didn't go see it was because it felt like a current events lessons more than a film. But... I think it does a pretty decent job of explaining all that, all the news and the buildup of why WikiLeaks was so important. There are moments that it's a little too flashy for my own taste. Like there's a scene where we find out it's a one-man operation and he's under several aliases. And guess what? There's a desk in Japan and then there's a desk in Finland and it's the same guy at the table.
Yeah.
You know, and in the very beginning there's this CG montage of the history of communication from, I think they dare actually did start with cave drawings, and then we get to the printed press. We get it. We got it.
A movie that's just way, way, way too much footage of guys sitting at laptops tapping it furiously, and then some kind of computerized, digitized look at what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, as we saw from The Social Network, it is possible to make a movie about geeks and a website and technology without having, having to stick the audience's nose into a laptop.
So maybe Aaron Sorkin should have done the screenplay for this.
Maybe.
But anyway, Cumberbatch, and by the way, Benedict Cumberbatch should, I hope he sent 10% of his check to, to Alan Rickman. Because he sounds so much like Rickman in this.
Have you seen him doing his Alan
Rickman
impression? Yes, I have. Impression?
Yeah, Benedict is, I've seen, there's a pictures of him with some of the Muppets from Sesame Street. And apparently, a couple times I've seen him on talk shows, he's really good.
Wow.
He's a lot of fun to watch. So that is out there. All right. film movement. Hi, Lisa Trifone. This week, since this month's installment, it's funny, I just finished watching last month's installments and I just got the new one this week. It's an Italian film released by Warner Brothers, which I found interesting. I think this is the first time where it's a label, a studio, on a film movement picture, but it's called, pardon my Italian, Garibaldi's Lovers. And it's one of these, again, probably couldn't be made in the States, or don't remake it, it'll be fine. We have intertwining stories that eventually will meet, all of which are tied in a bow by talking statues as they watch over everybody. We have an artist who gets a job painting a mural at a law office. You have a dad who's a widow. He's got a daughter who's seeing the wrong guy, and the son who does these weird experiments and hangs out with eclectic folks in town. And eventually they all connect together. It's a little charming picture. It's not bad.
Sounds like Local Hero Italiano.
Oh, no. Not even close to that. But I think you would want to go hang out in this little section of Italy. I'm not sure exactly where they shot it, but it's nice. It's quaint. Just a reminder, tomorrow night at 10 o'clock on MeTV on Svengoolie, they're showing Tarantula.
Mm.
Apparently it's February. So they're showing, I'm guessing, spiders and apes and other things. So that is out there. Do we have? Hey, could you play Tombstone?
Well, hello there. My name is Zamantee Tombstone from the Svengoolie program on MeTV, and I wanted to advise you that you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis. I flunked sociology, so good luck.
Could you play Fred Williamson too? I know, I'm very demanding.
Yo, this is Fred the Hammer Williamson, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI in Naptown. Know what I'm saying? Keep listening, you might learn something.
I think we'll eventually do just 60 minutes of show IDs.
That'd be awesome.
I think I'd rather watch the 30 Days of Oscar on Turner Classic Movies, wouldn't you?
What are some of the titles, you know?
It's all brought up.
Now
I'm trying to remember. Is it all Oscar nominees or all Oscar winners?
I thought it was all
Oscar winners.
Sure. We'll have to check.
Not necessarily just Best Picture, but for, you know, it wouldn't for Best Sound.
Kobe, could you check TCM?
Yeah.
And while you do that, I want to go into the archives. This is where studios like MGM, Warner Brothers, Sony, there are movies that you can buy, but you have to buy them online. You can't go get them in stores, or as Kobe likes to put it.
Yeah, I'll burn it for like $5.
You never did that, right?
No, I never did that.
Speaking of the Oscars, it's a film featuring one of the Best Actress nominees. This is a film from 1982. Do you remember the Meryl Streep thriller Still of the Night?
No.
I actually saw this in the theater with my dad. This is 1982, Meryl Streep and Roy Scheider. And this is Scheider still. I mean, I think this was the other film Streep did when she wasn't doing Sophie's Choice in 1982. Now, she had already won Best Supporting Actress for Kramer vs. Kramer, and Roy Scheider still riding the waves off of his well-deserved Best Actor nomination for All That Jazz,
yeah,
and got a giant check for Jaws 2. But this is a film, and it's directed by Robert Benton, who's done a number of really good films, character pieces, character stuff, Kobe. Some character stuff and some plot stuff.
Did he do Private Benjamin?
Robert Benton? I always think of Nobody's Fool. He did, I know. Places in the Heart. He did those. But this is a thriller that, as I watch it, I realize this was a thriller made for grown-ups. Because, of course, by 1982, multiplexes were washed over with horror, dumb teenager movies, I think is what Roger Ebert once called them. But the dumb teen slasher movies.
Yeah.
You know.
Get naked, then get knifed.
Get naked, yeah. Check the sound in the hallway, and then, yeah, get butchered by whatever. So I think MGM, UA, and Robert Benton and these folks wanted to make a grown-up thriller. There are elements of Hitchcock. Roy Scheider plays a psychiatrist who finds out that one of his patients has been murdered. And that guy, Joseph Sommer. There's a few New York actors in this. This was shot in New York. And he's going back through his diaries with this patient that he had an affair with a young woman played by Meryl Streep. No accent in 1982. This is young, quiet, shy Meryl Streep. And of course, it's the did she or didn't she. Jessica Tandy pops up as Roy Scheider's psychiatrist's mother.
Mm.
interesting gene pool there. But also Irving Metzman and Joseph Sommer are in this. Real again, that guy. If you look up these names on the internet, you're like, oh yeah, it's that guy. Anyway, the acting's decent. Lot of almost no use of a score, just at the very beginning and the very end. So, and there's lots of scenes where there's creeping and sneaking into offices. There's a big climb thing in the middle of the film, I should say, where it's at an auction house. That's where Streep's character works at. And while she's working, Scheider is quietly going into her office, and the killer may be in the building as well. Wow. So, you know, not groundbreaking work, but I think at the time was a breath of fresh air in lieu of Friday the 13th and Halloween and the other slasher movies. So.
I met Roy Scheider once in person. This was back when he was shooting that submarine show in Orlando. Do you remember that?
Sequest.
Can't even remember.
Was it Sequest, I think?
Yeah, something like that.
Was he leather? He was leathery then, right? He got really brown and leathery by the
maybe that was being in Orlando. He got soaked in the sun. I was surprised he was a tiny bit shorter than me. I would have thought he was a really, really tall guy.
The power of the camera.
The power of illusion.
And I always remember he did a film with Justin Henry called Tiger Town. He played a Detroit Tiger. And Justin Henry was a fan of his. And I was like, wow, you're what, 45? Well, like Daryl Evans, I guess. He's a DH. Yeah. So. But always like Scheider. Good career.
Good guy. Good guy. You know, never quite was that A-list star, so to speak, but was like a mainstream character actor, if there is such a thing.
Exactly. Now, we go to a section that, and we once again thank Chris Lloyd for this. Kobe.
Yeah?
Kobe.
Oh, man.
You weren't ready, were you?
No, I was looking at the TCM thing for you, man. Hang on.
Okay.
Hang on.
You're right there?
Where the heck is it? There
doing right our the annual show of dead people we like.
there's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
Well, this week, this is the second time where I have to pardon my Italian, film composer Riz Ortolani died at the age of 87. And this, Kobe, this might be musical. Oh, yeah. Won a Grammy for an instrumental medley featured in the 1962 film Mondo Cane. Mm. And going through some of the noted films, The Yellow Rose Royce from 1964, which I had to look up. It's a story of three different owners of the same car. So even before The Red Violin or 20 Bucks, we had The Yellow Rose Royce, 1964, Ingrid Bergman, Rex Harrison, Omar Sharif, George C. Scott, Alain Delon, Jean Moreau, and Shirley MacLaine, all in one film in 1964. That's not bad. Other films that he worked on, The Hunting Party, which was a gritty Western with Candace Bergen, Gene Hackman, and Oliver Reed. What else? Other films from 19... Some of these titles, I think, of. I looked at these, Chris, and I thought, this could be stuff that you would actually write about. 1964's Seventh Dawn with William Holden and Susanna York. The Spy with a Cold Nose with Lawrence Harvey from 1966. I believe that's a dog spy movie. Woman Times 7 with Shirley MacLaine and Peter Sellers. From 1968, The Biggest Bundle of Them All, starring Raquel Welch. Methinks these were badly translated Italian titles. And yeah, that's what it came up. Mackenzie Brake with Brian Keith. That was a World War II drama from 1970. I remember, actually, I saw this. The Valachi Papers with Charles Bronson from 1972, before he got stuck in tough guy 70s mode for the rest of his life. Lots of Italian action films. And then the other film he was known for doing the music of, 1980's Cannibal Holocaust.
Oh, boy.
Do you remember this?
I have not seen it, but it's one of those movies that like lives in legend.
It's the before Blair Witch Project. This was apparently one of the first of the concepts of found footage.
Yeah.
But because there was no internet, you were able to have a little more mystery, like you said, where you've heard about it. Did it really happen? Is there really cannibalism going on in this film or not? So this is also before Faces of Death. But yeah. Controversial for its scenes of bloody violence, animal slaughter, and gang rape, a context that makes the composer's film often score strikingly, even appallingly ironic. So,
by the way, 15 years since Blair Witch Project. Can you believe it?
Wow.
And those kids still aren't shutting up and complaining in the woods. But Kobe, you'll be interested to know this, but the work of Reese Ortolani has also been used in films like Drive, Inglourious Basterds, Kill Bill, and Django Unchained.
Really?
So now you're going to look up his work and see which ones were used in Kill Bill and Django Unchained. Chris, what is happening at the Film Yap?
Oh, lots of splendiferous stuff. Not many podcasts. We've been a little lazy on that point lately. to the point, I actually went to our pod host, and we were paying for a service, and I downgraded us to the free service because I was like, yeah, if we're only doing one a month, we really shouldn't be paying for this. But many other cool things, I promise you. Nick Rogers, I mentioned earlier, he's been doing a thing. He started it last year called Class of 93, oh, Class of 83, looking at films that came out 20 or 30 years earlier.
Yep.
So he's obviously updating that to this year now, doing Class of 94 and 84. So he's got the Hudsucker proxy up.
Ooh.
He does really interesting retrospective essays, I would call them. They're not so much a review, more like an essay revisiting these old movies. And like, why was the Hudsucker proxy not a bigger movie than it was?
And great reference to Muncie, Indiana.
Yes.
A Muncie girl. So,
Muncie girl.
And what have you been writing old films?
Let's see. I just had Carve Her Name with Pride, which is an old spy flick from the 1950s. Interesting, based on a true story. I'm trying to remember what else.
Now you're ready for a spy with a cold nose.
Yeah, I did Silent Running, one of those movies I've been meaning to catch up for years.
Emma
and years.
Loves Silent Running. Bruce Stern, where he's he is sort of an eco terrorist, but he's not Black Sunday crazy.
So yeah, just sort of catching up with things, and of course the new movies, videos, all that stuff, Schlock Vault, you name it, we're doing it.
Go to thefilmyap.com.
Cool.
And Kobe, what's at the TCM? What Oscar nominated stuff can people watch on TCM?
Well, looking at the main page, I don't see anything, you know, that stands out and says 25 days of Oscar or whatever the case is. But looking at the schedule for tomorrow, Saturday, February 1st, if you have TCM, apparently it's 1939 Day starting.
Ooh.
Let's run through the lineup here. Goodbye, Mr. Chips, Of Mice and Men, Sword Fishing, Ninotchka, Wuthering Heights,
Stagecoach. Bianca wants to watch that with you.
Yep. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, The Wizard of Oz, Prophet Without Honor, 8 o'clock, We Got a Break For, and the Oscar goes to 9:46, More About Nostradamus, Nostradamus, a short, and then 10 o'clock, Gone with the Wind, 2 a.m., Dark Victory, Love Affair at 4, and then 5:31 a.m., Service with the Colors.
1939.
Not a bad year.
Still the best cinematic year ever. Bogeist, movie I'd never seen from 1939. Beautiful, wonderful movie.
There you go.
As we progress through this, through the schedule, it looks like they're kind of sticking with that kind of theme, like movies from all, you know,
this should be 1962.
We had February 2nd appears to be 1945 Day. The 3rd happens to be 54.
I thought they always did 30 days of Oscar. Maybe that's AMC. I don't know.
Maybe. AMC has commercials.
Somebody does it.
Yeah. So anyway, or you could do your own. There, we have a time-honored tradition. When it's Oscar Day, Emma and I will at least watch one Oscar-winning picture of one way, shape, or form. So we're getting geared up for that. Also, this is a sign that I'm old and crotchety. The readathon at Emma's school is happening. Reading subtitles now counts for units.
Really?
For units. So I have said, okay, this is your chance to watch all these Japanese martial art films that you've been, inquiring about. So you know, she enjoyed Kill Bill. So I said, okay, now you have to watch Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, because that's the same wire work, same stunt crew that did that. So, and if I can finally get her to watch Yojimbo, because she loves A Fistful of Dollars, I keep saying, I think you're going to like Yojimbo. So, all right, I guess we have some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Chris Lloyd, thanks for hanging out. Enjoy watching Cars tonight.
I will.
Just try another one. Maybe that'll latch onto them. So, And don't forget, tonight at the IMA, you come up to me, you tell me film sociology is a real show. It's terrific. Thanks, Elmore. You will get a prize package courtesy of What's in the Closet here at WFYI Studios. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point at WFYI.org. Go, Peyton. Why not?
We go on. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California. Good night, Germany.
Think you know someone, right? You went to school together. Maybe you even grew up in the same house. And something happens and you discover that this is not the person you thought they were.
My name is Marie Walsh. I'm in my 50s. For 3 decades, I stayed home with the children and chauffeured them to their sports. And all that time, I was harboring a secret. Something happened that I was living with all those years. It all sort of exploded on me. I knew that the past had caught up with me.
On the next Snap Judgment, from PRX and NPR, we proudly present The Stranger. Snap Judgment, storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it. ¶¶